All right, welcome to PopCat. I'm Andrew Suter, also known as DJ Drew, and I'm here today with a very special guest, Professor Sean Ahern.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing today?
And pretty much, Sean, I brought you in today to talk about a lot of things dominating the pop culture newscape right now, mainly the pushback of all these big blockbuster movies.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't take a pop a master's in pop culture to speak to this, but, well, I have one. So, yeah, there's a lot of crazy movie news coming out. I think the ones that really hurt me, obviously the big news, was the Dune movie. It seems a little bit like it's got the Dune movies in general have always been kind of stuck in some sort of perpetual state of production, be it Jodorowsky's Dune that turned into the Stephen Lynch Dune that has turned into a cult classic, but at the time was kind of a bomb. And now we have this really great, beautiful looking film with Timothy Chalamet and all these other fantastic people involved. And that's been pushed back to October 1st, 2021. So a whole year from now at this point.
Right. And just with the whole Dune thing, like my roommate's been listening to the book on Audible and really kind of getting me into it.
Cause... Oh, it's an amazing series. Amazing series. The first three books are good. Then it gets a little wild. Right. But, you know, what is it? Dune, Messiah, and Children of Dune. Fantastic books. And yeah, one of my favorite series, one of the best ur-texts. I guess what I mean is many people consider it the ur-text of modern science fiction. And so, yeah, this was highly anticipated when it first came out, at least among Dune faithful. But yeah, pushed back again. But as the book does say, fear is the mind killer. So we must let this pass over us and move on, as it were.
Right, but no, with the with all that going on, I know similar with Batman, that also got pushed back to March 4th, 2022.
Yeah.
And that kind of did kill me a bit, because after the whole DC fandom event, getting to see the trailer, I gotta admit, I was really extremely interested in the movie.
You know, I'm torn, because like, part of me thinks like, we get a new Batman, it seems like almost every year, and... I don't know how I feel about Robert Pattinson being Bruce Wayne slash Batman. We always get a lot of good Bruce Waynes, I think.
Right.
We never get a lot of good Batmans. And say what you will about Mr. Christian Bale, but I think he had a really good Batman. And so I think that maybe we need a little time, you know, away from Batman. And this is a great opportunity to maybe build up some of the other DC content. Wonder Woman 84 just got pushed back to December, so around Christmas we'll have that finally. We were supposed to get it this summer. What are the other big DC stuff coming out? Suicide Squad's coming around the corner. I don't know if that got pushed back. I didn't see that. But maybe we can take some time away from Batman, and then maybe we can bring him back, because I feel like we get a new one every year. Almost.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. Seeing the DC fandom stuff, seeing the trailer, seeing all this amazing work they're doing, it is kind of, at the same time, frustrating not to have to wait for it. So yeah, but we have other stuff coming up right around the corner. It seems like we got Candyman, Jordan Peele's reimagination of that 90s thriller, will be coming out sometime in 2021. We've got... Quiet Place Part 2 coming out in April or late April. James Bond is coming up around the corner too. No Time to Die, I believe it's what's called. This one's called Ghostbusters Afterlife. I watched the trailer again this morning. Gave me chills. So I really, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm of the age group where Batman too, I suppose, was very big in theaters.
Right.
So, you know, that's really, really good as well. Paul Rudd is basically playing a character that are all of my friends combined into one as a fanboy in the middle of nowhere being like, oh my God, yeah, of course, Ghostbusters are great. So that's really neat. And the Black Widow is coming out April 9th, 2021, right? Something like that. Which other ones are you looking for, Andrew?
The main two really for me were Batman and Dune, but, I don't know, like, now that you mentioned it, Candyman getting pushed back,
yeah.
I was really disappointed because, I can't really pronounce the actor's name who's in there, but he was in HBO's Watchmen, mm-hmm. and he played Black Manta, mm-hmm. and, like, this guy just seems to be everywhere.
Yes, yeah. Well, and for a guy who's known for humor, Jordan Peele is fantastic with his directorship and his director work, and I'm looking very, very, very... happy about what they're going to do with. I mean, Us was amazing. Get Out, I mean, critically acclaimed.
Right.
So we can only imagine what he's going to do with Candyman. And yeah, I think the other one that I forgot that they were even doing is second Doctor Strange. So Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is coming out in November 2021 now. And Morbius, which was going to be another connection to the new Spider-Man continuity, is coming out in March 19th, 2021. That has Jared Leto as Morbius. And he looks great. And I forgot it was coming out. I'm not a big fan of Jared Leto's music, but he does know how to act. So yeah. That'll be nice to see.
No, but with the Doctor Strange movie, me and my roommate just rewatched Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness.
Oh.
And it was interesting getting a look at Sam Raimi just being a dude in the middle of Michigan making movies. But with him directing the Doctor Strange movie,
yes.
I got a running bet with my roommate that I do think he's going to find some way to, one, have Bruce Campbell in the movie, and then two, have Tobey Maguire somewhere in the movie.
So what I think is interesting about Raimi in general is, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. You know, his Spider-Man movies are great. I mean, and I always liked the bit of the fan idea that they were trying to turn Bruce Campbell into Mysterio.
Yeah.
I always liked that fan idea because, yeah, that makes sense. And I would have loved that because I think if there's anybody besides Jake Gyllenhaal who would have made a great Mysterio, it would have been Bruce Campbell, Ash, if you will. I think, you know, we have to remember that, you know, Raimi really did start this superhero run. So it's nice to see Marvel getting him into something that's probably definitely in his old school wheelhouse. That'll be the quick cuts, the zoom ins, the kind of the crazy B-movie schlocky stuff that he does is going to really lend itself, especially with an actor like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
definitely.
But with all these movies getting pushed back, I think, depending on how the rest of this year plays out, it's going to be, like, I was telling my roommate, the first 4 months of next year is going to be really interesting to look at movie-wise. Because unless, all this COVID starts going down, like, I don't think the movies are going to do as well.
Well, yeah, and I think that the idea of how we watch movies, how we consume movies and content in general has already changed, right? Some people, especially with platforms like Disney Plus, they've decided, okay, we're going to throw it on Disney Plus, and people will subscribe to it and be able to get it there. It's going to be interesting, right? So Regal Cinemas have closed down for the entirety of COVID-19, so they're taking a very big financial hit. AMC Theaters back in August said they were reopening, and they had 15-cent movie days, mm-hmm. apparently, according to the AP. And right now, they're remaining open, even as all these movies are moving into 2021, 2022, wherever it might be. And that's going to be a different type of financial hit. And it'll be interesting to see how they continue on with four or five movies for a month. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what that turns into. And people are still, I think, especially people your age, people my age, are very concerned about going into theaters as it is in enclosed spaces. I mean, I went to the mall the other day and I felt very, like, enclosed, and that's right. A pretty open space. So, you know, I think that it's going to be this is going to be a situation where we're going to see how media changes. Will it be like in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 where we're all watching it through a TV screen? I don't think so. But it'll definitely be a situation where maybe people are like, well, maybe I'll just wait till it streams. I honestly, the last movie I saw in theaters was at an AMC. It was one of those, like, really high-end dining experiences, which mm-hmm. was kind of fun. But I think that it's going to be interesting to see how... And I think it was the last Star Wars movie is what I saw.
Right.
But after that, I just usually wait for it to stream or come out. And maybe that's because I'm moving around from New Jersey to Nebraska and things like that. But I think that there's going to be a moment right now where it's like, well, I could go to AMC or I can wait 3 months, and knowing that the major companies are going to go, okay, nobody came out to the box office, we can get them on a streaming service or something like that.
Right, like seeing how well Bill and Ted 3 did VOD, I feel like, and especially with, there's this movie coming to HBO called Witches, based off the Roald Dahl book, and I feel like all these streaming services are kind of getting ready to test and see if they can do things without movie theaters.
And I think that's a great example of that is, and I hate to bring up this lovely documentary series, but Tiger King was such a hit at the beginning of quarantine because, well, we all had Netflix subscriptions and we had nothing to do, so let's go do some deep dives into Netflix. And I think Netflix, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime, they're realizing, and then of course all the subscriptions you can get in Amazon Prime, are realizing, okay, we can use this to get people to watch our new content. And yes, it might not be box office, you know, successes, but the idea of watchability and word of mouth and in many ways meme culture is going to lead people to buy these things and subscribe to these various services faster. And it might become a more viable option. Then again, Netflix cut how many different shows because of COVID, including one of my favorites, Glow. They just decided Glow has been canceled. Hopefully somebody else will pick it up. But, you know, it's an interesting gamble right now, I think, for big studios and things like that.
Right. Now, for example, with, like, towards the beginning of the quarantine, me and my roommate, we sat down and watched Defy of Bloods. Ooh. On Netflix, and it was just like, okay, let's watch the new Spike Lee movie, and, like, that has potential Oscar buzz. So, like, I do find it kind of ironic that last year all of these directors were really getting on streaming services for their inclusion in the Oscars and Emmys and stuff like that. But now it's just like, it seems like that's what most of the movies are going to be.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. 5 or 6 years ago at the Emmys when, like, you know, Orange and the New Black was, like, getting awards, people were like, you know, these stream services, they're not, they, you know, what are they doing here? And it's like, they're still television. It's still a format that is similar to HBO or Showtime or what other, you know, those other, you know, premium channels that you already, which I'm sure if you went back 10 years, you had the same issues with them having their shows up for Emmys or Oscars. But you're right. I think that it's kind of realizing, all right, where can I get funding to make what I want to make? Have, you know, a flexible enough schedule that's going to allow me to get, you know, to work around COVID works. I actually saw something interesting today. I was rewatching Colbert from last night. There's a fascinating, which should be October 7th, just to make this a little more context. They were talking about how the various soap operas are now using mannequins for romantic scenes.
Yeah, I saw
intimacy scenes. Yeah. And so, like, there's also, as much as it's like, now we're getting all this fluidity of, like, oh, well, I can use Netflix to send out my new movie and get these ideas out and stuff like that. At the same time, we still have to do things like, oh, I guess you're going to have to kiss a mannequin now. You know, things like that. And I think that's kind of fun and interesting for a moment. I'm trying to think about a lot of this, too, not just the streaming services, not just, you know, getting content out there or paying for content or, you know, being able to distribute your content, but also, like, the different things that we've seen, audience interactions, right? We saw it during the NBA Finals with the Zoom fan interactions. Right. We've seen it with one of my favorite guilty pleasures, WWE has created the Thunderdome in I believe it's in Florida, where they have Zoom like screens with all the fans watching, and then they pipe in the sounds. So it's kind of also fascinating to see how people are creating in this time of COVID. But it is going to, I think, hot take, I suppose, but I think that we're going to see studios get smaller for a little bit. And maybe that'll add to a new renaissance of film and being creative in what we can and what we can do and what we can create with.
Right.
You know?
No, but going back to the something that got pushed back that not a lot of people really know about, I was really looking forward to The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos movie.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah, that's a prequel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As somebody from the great state of New Jersey, yes, The Sopranos have become kind of the world's view into my state. And yeah, I think that people have been kind of wondering what Tony was as a young man for a while. Because we all, in the series, you get all these kind of like ideas of how he grew up.
Right.
But yeah, I was looking for, when was that supposed to come out?
I believe that was supposed to come out earlier in 2021 and just got pushed back to 2022.
Yeah, so I think after we get a vaccine and everything gets smoothed out, we're going to have a solid year and a half of really great films.
Oh, yeah.
That have just been on the shelf. You know, I think one of the big issues when Netflix, again, at the beginning of the pandemic was, what, you know, people are going to run through content, we're not going to have new content. And yeah, you're going to have new content. It's just going to take a little while to get there. And they're just going to, I think a lot of studios are worried about like what their finances are going to look like. And I think that's just not just, you know, film and television, but I think that's just everything that involves Well, unless radio. I mean, radio, we can be pretty socially distanced. but you know, I think that there's a lot of media outlets that are really, really struggling with that. But I think, you know, after this passes, and it will, there's going to be a moment where we have a lot of good movies coming out, like right back, you know, back to back to back. And as consumers, we're going to have a great opportunity to decide, okay, yeah, I've been waiting. I've been chomping at the bit for the Dune movie or for the Ghostbusters movie. So, you know, we'll be able to be really good tastemakers then, too.
Right. But no, with the Sopranos movie, because I watched Sopranos right before HBO Max launched, and it was on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And then I finished it, and now I at least got my roommate to watch season one, and the best way he put that show was, should I kill this guy? Should I not kill this guy? And that's the big moral issue with Tony. And I'm like, trust me, it gets way more complex as it goes on.
So, my friends and I often have to defend New Jersey, because most people only know Jersey for, like, the Jersey Shore and The Sopranos. And I say that when I was a kid, my parents moved out to Arizona for a little bit, so we were living, because my dad had a job out there. And my dad said, your mom and I would watch the opening to The Sopranos because we missed we missed the Holland Tunnel, we missed the Route 19, we missed, like, you know, the Turnpike. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's pretty much that. But it is a great series. What's your favorite episode, out of curiosity?
Definitely, I'm trying to remember, Whitecaps.
Oh, Whitecaps is very good. I like the Pine Barrens episode myself. I like any time that Tony's anxiety gets to him, because as somebody who also deals with mental health, it's nice to see that a guy who's running a criminal organization, a criminal family, if
right.
you will, it sounds nicer, you know, also has those issues. And I think that that's what made this show so interesting, was like, it was this guy who's supposed to be, you know, just toxic masculinity, but he's aware that it's an issue. Yeah, no, but Pine Barrens episode, because my parents live in the Pine Barrens, so, but Whitecaps is good, too.
But no, because I just knew that was, like, the episode to look out for while I was doing my first watch. And then when I finally made it to it, I was just like, wow, that's an excellent episode. And when I found out that was their Emmy episode, I was like, okay, it makes sense now.
Yeah, no, and I think what's really interesting is you look at the actors that were on there, and they all went on to do, most of them went on to do really great work afterwards. I know that Christopher was was on Lucifer for a little bit there, and did other things, which also, by the way, thank God that came out on
Netflix.
No pun intended, that came out on Netflix during quarantine. I was like, oh yes, finally season five. But you know, I think that that's one of those series that, yeah, you know, it's lauded for a reason, right? Like, it you know, you show that to young television students, you show those episodes to people to say, yeah, this is exactly what I do. And the idea that, yeah, going back and seeing what these people were when they were kids, starting out, I should say, is really important and interesting. And I hope they don't romanticize it too much.
Right.
You know, because it sounds like when you hear about their backstories, it sounds like, oh, they were just, you know, good guys and having a good time. But at the same time, like, clearly there was some trauma there, you know.
But no, going back and watching it, one of the biggest standouts for me was just looking at, like, especially in the, like, throughout the whole show, just what their using, like AJ's playing N64 in season one. And then as it goes on, like, towards the end of the show, he has a BlackBerry.
Yeah, no, it definitely, that's one of the fun things. I mean, I think that's why, like, my parents like watching old episodes of, like, MASH and stuff like that, because they like to go back, oh, yes, look at the technology at that time and stuff like that. Or look at, you know, there's kind of a weird nostalgia there. For me, it is funny, because I grew up, and I was in high school when Sopranos was on, for the most middle school, high school, during Sopranos. And I remember, there's a Twitter, there's a joke Twitter that's like, all of the various heavy metal shirts that the Sun wears. So it's like Slipknot and like Incubus and like all these, you know, or like, you know, Hatebreed. And you're like, and you can just see like his like transition as a character by like what angry music he's listening to.
Right.
And it's like Limp Bizkit. And yeah, you do. Yeah. There's these like, oh, there's an N64 in this shot, or there's a BlackBerry, or even the cars themselves are quite interesting. And you just remember, like, man, those were very large cars back, not and like kind of chunky and weird looking, you know, like the PT Cruiser kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a great series, and it's nice to see that they're going back to that universe. And that's going to go right on HBO Max, right?
As far as I knew, it was getting a theatrical release.
Oh, theatrical release. Okay, even better.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it's
just
also
just goes
there.
Right there, yeah. So, and speaking of which, just a side note, yeah, these streaming services have to be making bank right now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, HBO Max came out, what, in March? April?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So they, it was circumstances, I suspect, too, but they were like, hey, we're going to put everything you want on this one app. So have fun, you know, kind of a thing.
Right, but no, just to end out the Sopranos talk.
Yeah, sorry.
One of the funniest things, in my opinion, is when they reference, like Godfather and Goodfellas.
Oh,
but I'm
yeah.
like, when, like, Lorraine Bracco plays Dr. Melfi and Goodfellas exist in that universe. So who is Henry Hill's wife in Goodfellas? In The Sopranos.
No, I think that's kind of like a nice little wink, too. Like, you know we're a mob show. We know we're an organized crime show, but we're not... And we've got a bit of the stereotypes of those characters, but we're also redefining the genre a little bit of this criminal organization kind of subgenre of true crime or pulp crime, whatever you want to call it. And saying, like, yeah, we have all these masculine, tough guys, but they all have these issues that we have to unpack. Even the first episode when he has to burn down his buddy's, restaurant for no spoilers, by the way, for like a 20-year-old show, but when he has to burn down his buddy's restaurant and be like, oh yeah, I love your restaurant, but I gotta for insurance money or for whatever reason, I forget what the main reason was, and it's like, dude, like, There's an internal struggle there. It's not just, getting work done, So I think there's a reason why the guy was having a heart attack
right.
or anxiety attacks, in the first episode. The ducks!
But to shift gears a bit, I also wanted to talk to you about the recent Resident Evil casting news.
Yeah, so do tell me a little bit about that out of curiosity. I assume Mila's coming back? Please tell me she is.
No.
No!
Oh, thank God, no. No, because recently I hopped in the game series at 7 and kind of worked my way back. Because me and my college roommate, when I was living on campus, we both played that at the same time and really enjoyed it. And then I bought the first Resident Evil game remake.
Okay, the remake. I was going to say you bought the PlayStation 1 game? Wow.
And then I got the... second remake, and so on. And so I really just fell in love with the series. But hearing, like, I already knew what the Resident Evil movies with Mila Jovovich were, and I was just like, this isn't...
Wonderful. Is that the answer you're going to give? They're great. They all got theatrical releases, and I think I saw Resident Evil... I feel like it was like Resident Evil 3, 4, or 5. All right, one of them in theaters. And I remember being like, this got a theatrical release. This? So, yeah.
No, but just hearing that they're going to stick more closely to the games.
Yes.
Instead of just throwing a random character that's not in there. I'm like, I feel like out of all the video game movies that have tried to been made, I feel like this could be the one that's semi-successful.
No, absolutely. And I think if they don't have a whole scene where the person organizes their backpack and then when they go to open it and it's completely disheveled, I'll be angry. I think that, that would be a great little nod to the games. But in all seriousness, no, I think what I liked about the Resident Evil movies is that they did go a little bit away in some ways. Now, that said, if you look at what is the first Resident Evil game, really, right? It's basically a classic Night of Living Dead kind of thing. You're in a house and you're trying to get out, right? In Raccoon City. So I think, yeah, if you want to do it like that, make it a one space, one scenario kind of situation, that could be really, really cool. But I better see a post-credit scenes with a tofu man running around.
No, but seeing that they casted Robbie Amell from Amazon Prime's Upload as Chris Redfield, and Hannah John Kamen from, she was the ghost in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I've seen Robbie Amell, and because I watch a lot of the CW, Flash stuff, and he appears a lot in there. And he was also in, I feel, an underrated movie, The Babysitter on Netflix.
Yes.
And so seeing that, I feel like he's got real, comedic chops and then also like serious acting.
He does. I was going to say, I really liked Upload. I thought it was a really good series, and I hope they get a second season. I thought that was a really fascinating idea. It was very similar to The Good Place, but like with a nice little like twist to it. And I liked his he was very humorous, but I think that he also played the parts that need to be serious very well, and so he's got that nice combination. I think, yeah, absolutely. I think he'd be great in this movie. Does it have a release date, or they've just cast it?
They've just cast it. Okay, but seeing that they also casted Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield, which is the second game,
right?
I'm a little like worried if they're just gonna overpack the movie.
And you know, that might be the case, right? Like, I think a lot video game movies are still something that I think there's argument that, like, you know, when it comes to video games, you have to either make a game that's more like puzzle based, or you have to make a game that's more narrative based, that lends itself to movie esque things. And as somebody who's played the Resident Evil series, you know, you have to press B or A or Square or X at certain times, and it has a very narrative move to it, sometimes movie esque move to it. Some games will welcome movie adaptations. Others, like Street Fighter and Mario Brothers, and I could go on. Don't. But I think the Resident Evil series does lend itself to movies. But the problem is going to be, yeah, do we put Resident Evil 1 and 2 in a game together, or how do we chop this up to make it make sense,
right,
to people who haven't played the game and know about Umbrella and know about Raccoon City and know about all these different things going on? You know, yeah. So, but it's, as long as it's not like Mario Brothers, I'll be happy. I remember watching that as a kid going, man, there's going to be a Mario Brothers movie? And I saw it and I said, what is this? So, you know, there's that. But no, I think, Dennis Hopper,
Dennis Hopper.
It's Dennis Hopper as Bowser, yeah. Oh, jeez. Oh, God. But yeah, no, I think that, that's kind of something to, keep in mind, that it lends itself to a narrative already. It's just the question of how it's going to translate in a script form. I feel like, yeah, it's hard for me to like think about it. I mean, I feel like Metal Gear would be another good series they could do.
Right, because the dude that did Kong Skull Island, he's talked about how he's want to do a Metal Gear movie.
Which reminds me, they made a Rampage movie too, didn't they?
Yeah,
that hurts. That hurts. Yeah, so like you can see, there are some movies that are made for video games that are made for movies, but they're not everyone should be. Although a Qbert movie would be great. but like, yeah, like I think there's an opportunity there to, like, especially with like more the hardcore kind of like PlayStation games, it seems like that we're at that era of nostalgia now, where like PlayStation has become nostalgic, which makes me feel very old. But it's a situation where we can do some cool things with that, you know. But it's funny how popular games often don't necessarily lead to popular movies, right? Like, how many Street Fighter movies have we had? Like the Chun-Li movie and stuff like that. Now the animes are great, don't get me wrong, but like live action, not so great. Yeah, I've already made fun of Super Mario Brothers enough, so I won't. But you know, like, or like, you can do game movies that are inspired. Like Wreck-It Ralph is a really good example. But yeah, no, I think this is one of those opportunities where like Resident Evil, Metal Gear, heck, I feel like you could do Grand Theft Auto as a movie if you know done correctly.
Right, because you know? I saw this thing like somebody had casted GTA 5 as if it were a movie, and I was like, I'd definitely watch that.
Yeah, I mean, you can do some interesting stuff there, and these are movies that already have kind of a built-in narrative. You know, you just have to add the car chases for, you know, in a GTA movie, or in this case, the zombies and the monsters and all the insanity. But no, it's just going to be interesting to see. Translation wise, because there are certain things that work in games that don't work because of games that it's interactive, right? So when you're not able to interact with you know your favorite characters, how does that change the experience?
Right, because seeing that the Tomb Raider movie was semi-successful and that they're going forward with a second one,
right,
and then seeing that Tom Holland's gonna be Nathan Drake.
Oh, that's right.
And so, like, I feel like we're going to hit this new age of video game movies where, like, it's, like, it's made by people that played the games and
grew up with video
like
games. Yeah, it's not just a cash grab as it was like the early 90s. Like, oh, this is a new hip kind of thing the kids are into. You know, yeah, there's definitely something there. And like I said, it's kind of like the PlayStation era. Like everybody played Nintendo and played Sega as kids, but then like PlayStation came along and they said, okay, this is like my college or high school. You know, this is like the fine, refined game console.
Right.
Sony, it's a big technology company, kind of things like that. And so I think you're going to start seeing some really, really good, you know, especially games that are very narrative-based. I'm throwing academic theory in there. I don't need to do that. Very narrative-based. And so that directors say, I became a director because I saw how you walked through the mansion in Resident Evil, or how I drove the car in Grand Theft Auto, or how I interacted with various things, and even the Zelda games, right? There's an opportunity to do some cool things, but how do you crush a 30-hour game into 90 minutes?
Right, like after Red Dead Redemption 2, people were like, oh, I'd definitely watch a Red Dead movie, and people were casting it and that sort of thing, and I'm like, that's a massive, like...
Yeah, what is that game? It's like half the game is skinning animals. Like, what, I mean, you know, come on. And we have Westworld already, so why do we need...
Right.
You know? But yeah, you're right. I think there's definitely some opportunities there to do some really cool stuff with video games. And as somebody who grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, watching both superhero movies and video games get just destroyed at the box office, I welcome good video game movies. But there has to be some sort of knowledge of, okay, this is an interactive medium. How do we do this right?
Right. And I guess my final question, and it's a two-parter. What would be a video game movie you'd want made?
Oh, geez, that's so hard. I would like them to make Final Fantasy VI into a movie. I was thinking about this as we were talking about it. Because they made the Final Fantasy movie, I think it came out in 2000. And it was... It was definitely a Final Fantasy product, but it wasn't anything that people were knowledgeable about. It was just this, much like the video games, it was a standalone story about kind of this experience, this kind of mystical science mix. But if they did like Final Fantasy VI, I think that could be really cool because you have this breadth of very interesting characters.
Mm-hmm.
You have these very interesting, this very epic storyline that you could break up into two movies if you wanted to even. And you have a very great, a better villain than Sephiroth, in my opinion, from Final Fantasy VII, in Kefka. Kefka is like, holy cow, evil clown. He makes the Joker like look like child's play, right? So, you know, I think that could be a really good series or a really good iteration of the Final Fantasy series to make, because it already has a very. It was made in the 16-bit era, and even I played it back in 2012. I played it through, and I was like, this is a really good game. Like, this is just a fun, kind of like when you read a good graphic novel or you read a good novel, you're like, oh man, this was a good experience, right? Mm-hmm. And the characters stay with you for a few days, you know? That's how I felt playing that game. And I was like, okay, I can see this as a movie because you can do some cool stuff with it. That would be a game, that'd be a game changer for me if they made like a Final Fantasy VI movie. That'd be super cool. I want them to do a good Street Fighter movie. I want them to do a good... If you can do Mortal Kombat. And granted,
I was going to say, I already totally forgot. They are doing a Mortal Kombat
movie. Oh, man. Again? No, yeah. I mean, the first Mortal Kombat movie, looking back, it's definitely very 90s. But it's also kind of fun. It's definitely a guilty pleasure movie. The second movie, not so much. Well, yeah, in its own ways. But no, if they can make a good Street Fighter movie, like do like the Alpha series or something like that, like because the Alpha is kind of an origin story,
right?
So like do like Street Fighter Alpha and like make it like Ryu versus Akuma, you know, or something like that. You know, don't even bring Bison into it. Like, you know, do something that's like, you know, hero's journey kind of thing, and have Ryu meeting all these different wacky characters, some of which are slightly stereotypical racist characters, Dhalsim, E. Honda. I could go on. So maybe PC them up a lot,
right.
But like you could do this like really cool thing. I'm sorry, but like Mortal Kombat, like it's become a, it, I think part of it is like there was this I was just watching the High Score documentary series on Netflix, and I watched the fighting game episode, which is really, really good. And you see like the differences between like the people who are creating like the Street Fighter game, and like they're thinking about like the characters and like all this different stuff. And then you see the Mortal Kombat guys, and they're like, yeah, we just are really into Bloodsport. And it's like, oh, okay. So like, if you make a good Street Fighter movie, that'd be great. A great Final Fantasy VI movie would be great. Just so that I can see like what a, because you also think about like when you think about movies, you think of mise-en-scene, you think of costumes, and like I think of Final Fantasy VI, I'm like, those are some costumes, you know, those are some cool things you can do, you know, and they pop and they're interesting and they're intricate, and like Hollywood right now seems like they're really into intricate costumes or very flashy costumes, so then like that would be really good. And then like a Street Fighter movie just be fun because it's like kung fu, everybody loves kung fu. And you can do a lot of cool set locations. You can, the CGI would be really interesting. You know, that kind of thing, yeah.
Absolutely. Right. For me personally, if I had to pick a more serious video game movie I'd love to see is Dishonored.
Ooh, that's good. Or Uncharted would be good too.
Right. Yeah. But with that whole thing, like it's got this like Victorian England meets steampunk thing. And yeah. I feel like it really... Like, and you also got mystical power, so I feel like it really lend itself to the screen. Right.
I think that's what's interesting. It's like, again, another good one that'd be good, BioShock.
Right.
Again, just aesthetically, it would be interesting. But again, you'd have to have this combination of, like, BioShock. The whole thing about BioShock is that it's this experience, right? You get to choose your... It's why as much as I'd like to see a Fallout game, or a Fallout movie, I should say, it wouldn't be good because there's no... You're not the one doing these things.
Right. And they're doing a Fallout TV.
That may work a little better, I think. Yeah, I saw that on Amazon Prime's doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like that could be a little better because at least it's like you know episodic, you know. So, but yeah.
Right, but if I had to pick more like fun for the whole family video game movie, especially after seeing how well Sonic did,
I know, right?
I'd make a Spyro movie.
You know, that would be great, right? Who owns that? Is that Neversoft? No, that's I'm trying to think who owns Spyro. THQ?
I think so.
THQ now, yeah.
Because after they did all the remasters, like everybody scooped that up. And so either that or a Crash Bandicoot movie.
Either of those. Like, so that's really fascinating you bring that up, because there was a period of time in the 90s where like it seemed like every software company had a cute character, right? Because you had Mario and then you had Sonic. And then they're like, okay, well, Ubisoft has Rayman or, you know, Crash Bandicoot or Spyro. And so, yeah, you have all these characters from the 90s and the early 2000s that absolutely could make great movies. Spyro, especially, is a very Pixar-esque, very DreamWorks-esque kind of character, right? So he'd be good. Crash is interesting, I think, because, like, you know, they used him as a way to, like, kind of mock Nintendo. And so that would be interesting, too. Yeah, I think that could be fun. You know, I could see that. Yeah. I could see Spyro more than I could see Crash. But yeah, like, yeah.
Right. And I guess my, like, absolute final question for you, since you're a comic book guy, is what comic book character would you like to see either, like, on the big screen or on the, like, on a streaming service or...
Oh, boy, that's a question. Because so many of them are already, like, gotten, like, optioned at this point. Yeah. I mean, I was an old school New Teen Titans fan, but then seeing what they've done to the Titans... makes me sad in so many ways because they were my team when I was a teenager. Like, they helped me get through, you know, kind of, you know, identity and life and kind of stuff. That's a tough one, man. I would love to see like a really good like New Gods adaptation, like DC New Gods, Kirby-esque, like all the Kirby crackle in the world.
Because I know, Tom King and Ava DuVernay are working on a New Gods movie.
Yeah,
and his Mr. Miracle. Like, he had this 12-issue thing, and it was super interesting. And I feel like that's kind of what the New Gods movie is going to be.
Yeah, I think that, oh, man, it's just such a, again, aesthetically interesting epic story, very Thor-esque. Like, it's definitely something that DC could be like, hey, you guys have Asgard? Well, we've got New Genesis. We have Apocalypse. We have Darkseid.
Right.
Like, that would be really, really cool. And, like, you have Orion, who's, you know, the son of Darkseid, but he's, you know, the son of, you know, the leader of New Genesis. And, like, it's such an epic series. It's very Kirby-esque. It, you know, it is Kirby. And it's just very cool. And I like that. And now that I think about it, too, like, I'd love to see a Kitty Pryde movie. Like, I'd love to see a Shadowcat movie where it's not... If you've been reading any of the X books lately, they've been amazing. And they've done some really cool stuff with the Marauders. And Kitty Pryde's the leader of the Marauders. And, like, they've made her such a cool character. And, like, I think it would be neat to do, like, a Shadowcat movie. Because you have a character, like, that's just tough, you know, strong woman, but also, like, not just, like, action hero. She's kind of a nerd. She's into into computers, and she's, you know, so much associated with Wolverine. So you could have like a Hugh Jackman cameo, like this kind of. I'd like to see that too. But like New Gods or like Kitty Pryde would be cool.
Right, for me, I would just do a Power Man and Iron Fist movie.
Ooh, yes.
Because especially, like, I know the shows were their thing. I'd like Marvel whenever they can legally use the characters. I'd like them just to keep all the people, because I know Marvel TV didn't really like crossing over all that much.
Yeah, unlike DC, like it seems like Marvel's really good with the big cinematic stuff. DC's always been good with like the small stuff and on the TV. And yeah, I would. I'd love to see like that. That's a great point. Like Heroes for Hire would be a great thing to do. Like they did Defenders, and I was like, yeah, all right. But like Heroes for Hire would be fun because then you could do the whole. It could kind of be like kind of like Daredevil, but they're not lawyers, right? Like, it's just like, we're trying to make money because we're heroes. Like, that, right. That's cool, yeah.
Because after the first seasons of each, I was like, you should just still have the cliffhangers you had, but just do a Heroes for Hire show.
Absolutely. No, and that's what's cool about Marvel, right? Like, DC's about, like, high-end, like, these are the heroes, and they're up in their castles being, you know, heroes. And then what I always liked about Marvel is like, yeah, we have the Avengers, we have the Fantastic Four, we have the X-Men, but then we have all of these, you know, the street crew, like the street players, be it Spider-Man, Daredevil, Power Man, Iron Fist, whoever it may be, they're doing the day-to-day work and they're not getting paid for it. They don't have the trust funds that the X-Men, that Xavier right. has or, you know, the science that, you know, the Baxter Building is, creating. Or Tony Stark's checkbook, for the Avengers. But like, they're out there, it's the only thing, like Spidey's like, delivering pizza, in the second Spider-Man movie, but he's also like saving the day, like, that kind of thing.
Right. But no, seeing that there's a lot of adaptations from like not even Marvel or DC, like with how popular The Boys has gotten.
Oh my gosh. I'm so happy a new episode's out tonight. Yes.
No, I told my roommate, I was like, look, because I normally watch him on Thursday night and then watch it with him on Friday or Saturday. And I told him, I was like, since it's the finale, I'll respect the friendship and you and me will watch it.
Wait,
at the exact
the finale
same time.
Is this one?
Yep.
Oh, is it only 10 episodes?
Eight episodes.
See, that's kind of cool. Okay, but like, oh my god, like I loved it. I remember reading The Boys back in the day, and Garth Ennis, like, obviously has done some amazing things, but it's very, very gory.
Right.
And at a point, you just put down an issue and go, okay, I'm good, thanks. that was my limit.
Because when I read Preacher, I was just like, wow. Like after just certain points in there.
Yeah, I think the first two arcs, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go take a breather.
I'm really looking forward to the finale, but with a comic, I think, because I know I talked to you about this, how their Amazon is doing a animated Invincible show.
Yes.
And
yes.
The other day, like it seems like I just willed it into existence, but like you ever wonder about things and then it's just yeah. right there. I was like, man, I wonder when that's gonna come out, and then Ryan Ottley, the artist for it, tweeted out an image with the Amazon Prime logo, and I'm just like, all right, I'm expecting a trailer here soon.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that there's people are realizing that, what do you mean comics make money? Like, or comics have these dynamic stories, and Invincible's a great story. Oh my gosh, like, I need to get the hardcovers for that series. Oh, by the way, Image makes probably the best trades in the business right now.
Right.
They're making the best, the leather bound, these beautiful things. And Invincible's series is a perfect example of it. But yeah, no, I think that's a really fascinating, interesting series that's going to lend itself to a good adaptation. And yeah, like The Boys, like I'm blown away, but how my poor mother, she's like, oh, there's a superhero thing on Amazon Prime. I'm going to watch it. And she turns on the first episode of Boys and goes, it's a little dark. I'm like, yep, it's a deconstruction.
No, but I feel after Invincible, everybody's going to be scrounging up the rights to all these other Image books. And one I'd love to see that FX already got the rights for was Southern Bastards.
Oh, no kidding.
By Jason Latour and Jason Aaron. And I just feel like if just somebody put it out, it would just win an Emmy immediately, because I just love the story.
Yeah, no, there's some Image has done some for the. They've been quiet, like quietly putting out some of the best books in the business for like the last 20, oh, not 20 years, but like probably past like 10 to 15 years. Like, obviously, Invincible was a big hit. That's Hickman, right? Yeah, yeah. So, and then Walking Dead, Hickman. What a Hickman. But then, you know, you have things like, you know, The Wicked and the Divine, you know, Jamie McKelvey and Kieran Gillen. I mean, an amazing series on Image. You have, I think, Warren Ellis put something out, Trees, I think it was called, on Image. That was highly acclaimed. I need to check that out. But there's, they quietly did it, whereas DC and Marvel were kind of like, look at all the different things we're doing to our characters, and, oh, man, we're being, you know, super, like, dynamic with our origin stories, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, like, it felt like there was a reboot in DC every, like, 5 years.
Right.
And then, you know, Image is like, yeah, so we just wrote this, like, fun little, you know, creator-owned comic. You should check it out. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, Saga.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that kind of stuff. And you're
that
just
also,
like,
that yeah. also would be my next one is I just want HBO to buy it and do an animated Saga.
Animated? Really? You think that? Oh, it is beautiful. I mean, it would be a good animated series. Yeah, I think no, you're right. I was just thinking, like, well, it could be live.
So I feel like they could have back-to-back seasons.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
And not for nothing, by the way, HBO did a really good job with the Watchmen extension.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of, you know, I'm sorry, DC, but, like, what you did with the Watchmen, not great. What HBO did was they took the source material and said, okay, let's expand that out. And they did a really good job with it, I think. I was hesitant, I'll be honest, when I first saw it. And I was like, oh, they're going after all the things. I like this. So, yeah, no, if HBO got a hold of Saga, oh, my God. And, again, I think there's still a stigma in the United States, and this is my old anime club self coming out. There's a stigma in the United States when it comes to animation. It automatically goes, oh, animation's for kids.
Right.
So I think that, like, Saga would be a perfect example of, like, this is not for kids. Kind of like Aeon Flux in the 90s was not for kids, you know, on late-night MTV or Adult Swim or things like that.
But, no, now, like, you going
there's
off that.
There's a Bebop movie coming out, or series coming out, right?
Yeah, I think
speaking of anime.
For Netflix, I think John Cho is.
Yeah, that's, yeah, yeah.
But no, seeing that, like, Rick and Morty won an Emmy for the Vat of Acid episode.
Vat of Acid episode was great. Oh, my God. It's probably my, it is my favorite Rick and Morty episode. It's tough. Again, pop culture masters. So, like, you see the memes of, like, Rick and Morty. You're like, okay, I'll watch it. And you're like, it's good. It's really good. And, like, you know. But then, like, you meet the fans, and you're like, okay.
All right, yeah.
Take, like, 20% off. To quote another thing I watched, Letterkenny, you know, take a little bit off of that. And then you watch that episode, and go, this is why this is an iconic series and why people make all the jokes.
Because, like, I was watching, and I was like, oh, this is super, like, fun, clever episode. And then it's just, like, it gets dark.
It does get dark. I think what I love about the Vat of Acid episode is that, like, my roommates walked up to me and said, have you watched Rick and Morty? I'm like, not really. I just, like, you know, I know there's a new season. I'll binge it at some point. He's like, no. And, like, when my buddy, my roommate back home, when he says that, he's like, no, you got to watch this. Like, that's when you're like, all right, how good is this? And you watch that episode and then the time traveling episode, too.
Yeah.
I feel like those are the same episodes for some reason. Is it? No.
Are you talking about, like, with the snakes?
Yeah. Like, both those episodes, like, back to back, I was like, it's that experience when you're, like, just slapping the side of your couch or laughing so hard. Like, that's how bad it was. I was like, the reveal in the Vat of Acid episode, I was just like, oh, my God. Like, it's like, you just did that.
Right.
Wow. No, that's exactly a perfect example of, like, this is what animation could be for people of all ages. You know, or and I think that really started with my generation, things like, not just anime, but like Daria and Celebrity Deathmatch and things like that. But, like, yeah, we're starting to, I just love that Rick and Morty is kind of like the anti-Doctor Who, too.
Right. But no, seeing that, like, I feel like Justin Roiland or somebody on his writing team just really loved The Prestige because they did it in that. And then in other show, Other Worlds or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got
like,
you.
They
yeah.
also, like, he was like, I've been prestiging myself.
I forgot about that. Yeah, no, I need to watch that too. That's on Hulu, right? Like Other Worlds, yeah.
Solar Opposites.
Solar Opposites, that's what's called. Okay, yeah.
But
yeah.
No, seeing that all these different shows are, like, making a comeback, like Clone High.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, I feel like those guys have just been doing everything. Like, they're like, okay, we did the Lego Movie, we did Spider-Verse, just so we could have Clone High
back.
And they, like, I bet they were just, like, excited that all these JFK memes came out of nowhere.
Okay, so as somebody who watched the original series of Clone High when it first came out, when people started making JFK memes on Twitter, I was like, why are they making Clone High memes? Like, the kids today don't know what Clone High is. Like, there's no way. And then I was like, wait, like, people like Clone High? And I found out, like, you know, you can find it everywhere online. And I was like, so one day, my roommates, they're my same age as me. I was like, have you ever watched Clone High? They're like, no, what's that? And I was like, oh. So I put it on, and they saw, they just turned into us making the JFK voice whenever we walk past each other. Nothing bad ever happens to the Kennedys. Yeah, like, it's, gosh, that was such a great series. And I was mad that it was only one season, but it's a really good season. Oh, yeah. So, like, the fact that we're getting Clone High back, too, is really great. And, yeah, they're doing all these things just so they get Clone High back. And, again, if you look at the voice work in Clone High, like, look at the people on that, and you go, oh, my God, like, SNL people who go on to do other, like, amazing, like, you're just like...
Because I watched Last Man on Earth, which was also made by Lord Miller, and I was like, oh, so that's why they used Will Forte.
Yeah, Will Forte is Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, it's really interesting to see, like, all these people that, like, I think there was a time, like, in the early thousands where it was, like, there was all these really hip voices, not just, like, on MTV, but, like, things like Mr. Show and things like Arrested Development. And, you know, you had these really, like, kind of, like, high schoolers were watching these shows and being like, this is really funny, you know. And then, you know, everybody, but, like, Standards and Practices or the Nielsen ratings weren't showing, like, you know, were like, this isn't the right thing for this channel or whatever, and they went away and they became kind of lost media, and now they're coming back because of the internet and other things and memes, right. And people are going, oh my God, this is genius, and I'm like, yeah. Gandhi as, like, the awkward
party guy,
like, I mean, that's great. Like, I mean, I love the fact that in Clone High, like, Kennedy, JFK is brought up by two gay men. Like, that's hilarious. There's It's if you haven't watched Clone High, go watch Clone High. It's amazing. For so many pawns his pants. Like, there's just so many, like, things I can quote from that. It's bad. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. But no, Sean, I'd like to thank you for joining me.
Anytime, you know that.
Yeah. But no, that has been episode 2 of PopCat. You can find me for more information on 919 The Cat on Twitter and Your Music Authority on Facebook.